Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. You know me, I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle, and you know us, we are your HR analytics dashboard, bringing all your data from all your different HR systems together, whether you're using an HRIS, ATS, engagement, performance, Glassdoor, whatever you're using, you can bring all those systems into one place so that you can view, track, share, and analyze all your HR metrics from one dashboard. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle, because today we have a very special guest. So if you could please help me welcome to the podcast, Bryn Kennedy. She is the founder and ex-CEO of Topia, and she's also the author of Flat, Fluid, and Fast. I think she has some stuff. She's running for a position in our government. She's doing a lot of stuff. She's super busy. I can't even believe she made time for the podcast. Please welcome to the podcast, Bryn Kennedy. Woo!
Thank you so much. Thank you. And you guys are always a priority in my calendar, even when it is very dramatic.
Got it. So today, based off of a lot of the things that Bryn has done with her company and the book that she's written and just her passion and everything that she really cares about, our topic is how to do career pathing right in an ever-changing economy. There's so many things that are happening, whether it's the gig economy and whether or not people are working full-time jobs, part-time jobs, cobbling a bunch of different jobs together. People are moving from job to job very quickly, not staying as long as they used to. So this is a very important topic. But before we actually begin, Bryn, I have to ask you the question that we always ask at the beginning so people get to know a little bit about you, which is how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Well, I had sort of an interesting path. I started my career in real estate and infrastructure investing, and I had the opportunity to do that all over the world. And through that experience, I really saw that work was changing, demographics were changing, technology was playing a bigger role in our companies, and that people were working all over and in many different ways. And I just felt like there wasn't a company really tackling that yet. So I went to business school and started Topia, which started out as a relocation company, and then over the years evolved to be a full HR management platform for any person who is working in a mobile way. So across locations, across geographies, in and out of the home, in and out of different types of employment, and supporting all the administration for that.
Awesome. And so based off of your company, Topia, and also your book, it seems like you've been really talking about this talent mobility revolution.
Yeah.
So we need to know, what is that? Is this something that you came up with? Is this something that was already defined and created, but you just know more about it than anyone else? Like, talk to us about this.
I think it's a little bit of both. So the concept of talent mobility has been a dialogue for a while in the HR industry. There was a lot of confusion about what it meant. A lot of people, you know, 10 years ago would look at me with glazed over eyes when I said talent mobility. They'd, you know, some people would say it was moving between roles. Some people would say it was moving between locations, like more relocation. Some people would say it was recruiting. Some people would say it was something else. So what I recognized was that talent mobility is actually a much broader definition than it's ever been before. And it encapsulates pretty much all of how the white-collar workforce will continue to work today. And that is across geographic mobility. So working across different physical states and countries. There's location mobility, so working in the home and in the office. There's employment mobility, so working as a part of a traditional full-time employee or as a member of the freelance economy. And those things one person will experience all across their career. So I coined the term revolution, that these trends were sweeping our workforce, and spent much of the last decade studying them. So I have become a expert on the future of work and the talent mobility revolution.
Got it. So you mentioned a couple of different things that are happening, whether we're referring to geographic mobility, people working from home or a hybrid of part to home, part office, gig economy, part-time job, full-time contractor. There's so many different days, so many different ways to work now. If you had to rank them, what do you think is the biggest shift in the current workforce and how it's actually made up today?
Well, I think that the real underlying, so first of all, there's three major macro trends that are driving this talent mobility revolution. There's automation, globalization, and demographic change. The biggest trend, I think, in terms of physically the way we work that comes out of that is the notion of a career and an office. So in the book, I talk about my grandfather's job as a contrast. He worked at a factory called, at a company called Mead Paper Company. It was a job that was 9 to 5 where you were expected to go into the office or the factory every single day. If you performed well, the expectation was that you would be promoted, and with your promotion would come compensation. And maybe it was a little boring, but it provided stability and benefits and these kinds of things. What we see in careers today is a much more fluid concept of a career. People don't want to nor need to go into an office every day, 9 to 5. They don't necessarily work at one company and progress through a linear career ladder at that company. They will be working in different teams, across different projects, across different companies as both freelancers and full-time employees. And in many instances, they'll be doing some of that from home or some of that from a coffee shop and then some of that from the office.
Got it. And so let's bring it back to the topic around doing career pathing right. Before we even get into how the economy is changing career pathing and what does it look like for our listeners of HR and people op leaders out there who are either new to career pathing, may have done it before, but really trying to look at it in a new way, or people that have done it for a long time and just want to hear your opinion, what does it mean to actually put together career pathing inside of a company?
Today or more traditionally, do you mean?
Either way. I mean, hopefully you can answer both ways.
Yeah, definitely. So traditionally, career pathing was pretty linear. You know, you would join a company with a particular in a particular function with a particular title. So let's say you start as the junior finance manager, and then you would have particular skills or milestones that you needed to achieve. Sometimes it was just tied to tenure. And as you achieved those, you would go through a career ladder, which had promotions up to a management position at some point and potentially theoretically leading the finance team at that point. So it's very vertical and very linear. What is happening today and has where the workforce has really shifted over the last few years is that career pathing looks a little bit more like a zigzag. So someone may start in the finance function, but then after a few years, they may decide that, you know, some of those quantitative skills could be applied in marketing. And maybe they'd like to try a project over there or try something there. And then they may go to business school and decide that, you know, hey, they have a strong interest in going into, let's just say, being sort of investment banking or, you know, something else, consulting maybe. But they may switch careers entirely and go to a different company. And then, you know, maybe after a few years there, they may decide that, well, I, you know, want to write a book or do a blog or take some time off. So I'm going to work on this blog for a few years. And as a part of doing that, or as a part of going back to school, I'm going to work in the gig economy to leverage my skills and sort of make some more money on the side. And then I may go back to a company. So, you know, the net of it is that career pathing traditionally was one company, one function, and linear. And today it is many companies, many functions, and more of a career zigzag.
So for the HR leaders that are listening now, what would you advise them as they are trying to make sure that there is some type of career pathing strategy in their company and that employees perceive that there is an opportunity for upward mobility?
I think it's really, really critical to work with your employees to classify their skills. So historically, HR leaders have looked at employees tied to job titles. What is really critical today is to understand the skills that all of your employees have. So re-architect the way that you classify your employees and do it more on a skills graph than just a job title graph. And then from that, be able to identify going forward, particularly in the face of disruptions, employees have particular skills and particular competencies, and those can be applied to different projects or different departments across the company. With that, then the employees further develop their skills, they can progress in level and responsibility, and ultimately it provides for much more employee engagement and, frankly, much more business value, particularly in a dynamically shifting economy.
Got it. And then when it comes to reskilling workers, so now that you've classified them and you understand that you have gaps, how do you go about making sure that you're actually helping your current employees reskill and retool so that they're prepared for the workforce of the future?
So I think there's two separate aspects to this. So I'm a big advocate in continuous learning, and that was a big and continues to be a big part of Topia's culture. So, you know, there's an aspect that companies should be continually investing in learning and mentorship for employees. But the other thing is that jobs are increasingly getting disrupted by automation and other macro trends, and that's across all parts of our economy. So if you as a company have categorized your employees based on the skills that they have today, and then a job gets disrupted, the reaction should not be to lay someone off. The reaction should be to say, okay, we have a person whose job has been automated or disrupted. They have a set of skills. Where else could they be applied within the business? Now, often there is a gap between what a subsequent role may need and the skill set of the employee whose job was impacted. And that's where the idea of retraining comes in. I like to call it just period training, because you're not retraining, you're developing a new skill that can be applied, or you're furthering an existing skill that can be applied to a new role. But that's a really critical thing. It's also much more affordable for a company to hire someone or place someone internally in a new role rather than hire externally. So the way I think about this is this career pathing and this skills graph is both a business and a moral imperative in an economy where jobs are dynamic and there's more disruptions than we've ever seen in our history, from technology and macro trends to jobs today.
So one of the reasons why a lot of listeners love our podcast is because we get practical next steps for our guests. And so as an HR person that's listening to the podcast and hearing everything that you're saying and saying, okay, Bryn, this is awesome, but what does this really look like? Can you give them an example or help them out to understand what does it look like to really classify skills? What types of categories do I classify them in? Do I classify by the industry skills that you have? Do I classify by the role skills? So developer, engineering, all the programming languages. Do I classify by the departmental skills that you have? I mean, there's so many different ways that I could classify. And then once I do that, do I now use some type of career pathing software, or do I put together spreadsheets? Or, I mean, how do I go about actually showing here's the path that you can get to, and then this is how much education you need, or these are the new skills? I mean, what does that whole thing look like for somebody to actually go and at least try to get started after listening to this podcast?
Well, I'll give you a few tips here, but I will say the book is written as a 9-step playbook to transform your company in the face of the talent mobility revolution. And a large part of it covers how to base your workforce on skills rather than job titles and dynamically match employees with projects. So all of the detail is in the book, so I encourage everyone to buy the book. But at a high level, if you're sitting with a very traditional organization today, the way to start this is there are HRIS systems of record that have started to offer skills graphs, and recruiting software that is offering skills graphs. We talk about quite a few of them in the book as examples. You first want to reclassify your workforce along that skills graph. So typically people talk about a 50,000 skills graph. So you want to reclassify each of your employee within your system of record along that skills graph. Then you basically know what you have in your workforce. And then as new jobs come up, you want to architect the job description, not necessarily just with what the job is for or what it does, but you also want to attach a set of skills that are needed for that job. And then ideally, you want to match your internal workforce with open jobs, and also tap into the external workforce, whether that's recruiting a full-time employee or augmenting your current workforce with freelancers. So that's at a high level how you sort of get to this world of a much more skills-based career pathing and much more dynamic job mapping. But the book, as I said, goes into much, much, much more detail about how do you go from being a traditional organization to a agile organization that can succeed in the talent mobility revolution, and what are the 9 steps to do that.
Awesome. And this is a great time to transition to the book. So you wrote this book, Flat, Fluid, and Fast, Harness the Talent Mobility Revolution to Drive Employee Engagement, Accelerate Innovation, and Unleash Growth. Why did you write it?
So as I said, I at the beginning, so I spent more than a decade, but much of the last decade studying the trends that will impact the workforce today. And what I saw through that journey is that, as we talked about, work is really changing in the face of globalization, demographic change, and technology. And that's historic. Historic change is underway. And to help workers thrive and to make organizations more agile and efficient, we must understand these changes as they're occurring, and we must redesign both business operating systems and our contract for work in America. Now, what I saw through my firsthand experience is that the vast majority of organizations are not ready for these changes. And frankly, a lot of workers don't know how to manage their own career in the face of these changes. And government is not ready either, which is why I'm running for Congress. Because in a world where work looks very different, you need to relook at how do you preserve and expand collective bargaining for workers? How do you support them with benefits, regardless of whether they're a full-time employee or a freelancer? How do you plan as a society for increasing disruptions? And so what I saw through all of my work at Leading Topia was that so much of our society is not ready, and that there isn't really a practical playbook for people on how to succeed in the face of these trends.
Got it. And thanks for that. So we're not going to go over every single thing in a book, but we would love if you gave us a little bit more in regards to some of the things that you talked about in the book so that people will actually go buy it, because it definitely is a good read. But one of the things that really stood out to me, and correct me if I'm not saying this the same way you said it, but that the CHRO, the head of people, VP of HR, whatever that title is, should now look to become the chief talent mobility officer. And I thought that was interesting. And I laughed a little bit because HR just got up enough confidence to now move from HR to people operations. And so I'm curious, how do you feel about that? Is that more just of a mindset title, or do you think that title should actually exist? And if so, what does it mean to have that title?
So I think the HR function has, and we talk about this in the book, but the HR function has gone through a really interesting evolution over the last few decades from really about enforcing workplace standards and benefits, and if some would say being more transactionally focused, to being more about talent and recruiting and engaging employees and being a partner to the C-suite in many ways around that. And I think that as we go forward, particularly with these trends occurring, the HR organization will continue to become the most pivotal part of companies, and not just a partner, but a real strategic voice for the success of a company. Because if you think about everything that's happening today with the disruptions happening in our society and to our jobs, all of those things affect people. And everything that is happening within a company from a perspective of succeeding or generating profit, that's all down to people. And the ability to support people and to unleash them going forward is more important than ever today. So when I think about the evolution of the HR role, it's not only about talent today in the stagnant sense. How do I recruit? How do I performance manage? These kinds of things. It's also about this idea of thinking about one workforce, full-time employees, freelancers, gig economy, the interaction with machines, moving people dynamically between jobs and projects as jobs are disrupted. That's a much broader conception of HR and candidly probably a bigger impact to human beings and to the company in the face of these disruptions than a traditional sort of recruiter performance management and benefits administration function. And so that's why I think about this idea of the head of HR needs to go from being traditional HR to this this custodian of talent mobility strategy, which is at the basis of business success today and supporting our workers.
If you had to give HR a grade in regards to where they are now around this talent mobility revolution or providing great career paths for their employees, what would you give them?
Well, I think that anyone who reads the book would get an A.
Okay. All right.
Look and apply the principles, you get an A.
And then in regards to the sense of urgency HR leaders should have around this, how much urgency should they have around this? I mean, is this code red? And the reason why I'm asking is because HR leaders constantly are hearing, and just people in general, AI is going to automate jobs away. Robots are going to take jobs away. You know, so many things are going to take jobs away. No one's ever going to work full time anymore. How urgent do you truly believe that HR needs to really figure this out? Is this something that if you don't figure out in the next 6 to 12 months, you think, then you're in serious trouble? Is this more of a 3 to 5 or a 5 to 10 year thing that people need to get right? What does this look like?
So what we say, what it says in the book, and I think if you read through the whole book, you'll see why it's such an imperative. But my view is anyone who doesn't understand and start to implement these changes in the next 5 years will be out of a job by that point. So it's, I would say, I don't know if code red is the right term, but I would say it's code urgent. It's urgent to understand what's happening today. It's urgent to understand the steps to apply these principles to managing and empowering your workforce and supporting your workers and empowering your business success. And then it's urgent to start to get them done. Now, it's not an overnight process at a traditional company. We conclude the book with a discussion of change management. You know, what are the principles to go from a traditional organization to a more agile organization? So there is an evolution to get there. But I think it's code red to know what you need to do and start the process.
Got it. And then the last question in this section, if an HR person wanted to be introspective and start to really understand where they are in this process, how do they assess how well they're doing this?
So there's, as I've said, there's 9 separate sections that we identify in the book. And it's written like that for a specific reason. It's written in sort of a modular format so that people can read it end to end or dive in and out to a particular area. So within each area, we look at what does a traditional company look like and how has that been operating? What is the best practice? And then what's the process to get there? And so I think for each of those 9 modules, any HR person could read the book, read a particular module that they may be trying to assess themselves on and get a sense of where they fall versus a traditional stagnant company and a flat, fluid, and fast best practices agile company.
Got it. All right. And now we're going to transition to my favorite part of the podcast, which I call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right. So the real question, do you like bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
I don't like bread pudding, actually.
Oh, Bryn. Sad, sad Bryn. All right.
I'm a big creme brulee fan and I'm a big ice cream fan. Just kind of, I'm not high maintenance, just ice cream is my favorite, vanilla.
Okay. Random question. I've spoken to a bunch of people who have written books and it was just so damn hard for them to come up with a title. How long did it take for you to come up with the title and what was that process like?
So my editor was really, really helpful in coming up with the title and my agent as well. So it took us a couple of months, but what we really wanted to communicate is this idea that organizations of today and tomorrow have much more fluidity. They are fast and responsive in the face of change and that they're not based on the traditional patriarchal linear career path. So they're much flatter. So it kind of spoke to us from what we're trying to communicate about the organizations that will succeed today and tomorrow.
Got it. And then the ridiculous question. You say that there were a lot of things that you see in government that just weren't going well, which is why you were running. What's one of the most ridiculous things that you're seeing in government that made you want to run to make things better?
Well, I built Topia to build software to help talent mobility run better. And one of the things that I'm focused on a lot in government is modernizing government through technology so that taxpayers can understand what their elected officials are up to and how tax dollars are being spent, both you know, we're going to be doing that with our constituent services and also ensuring that federal agencies are run effectively, systems are modern, and that there's no pay raises for members of Congress until we can prove to our constituents that we are using their money wisely and with modern systems.
Got it. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast. You've definitely provided a lot of wisdom, and you've given us all a lot to think about when it comes to career pathing and talent mobility revolution. So, Bryn, thank you for being on the podcast.
Woo! You are so welcome. Yay! That was fun. I appreciate the invitation.
Sure. So, where can people find you and all the things that you're doing online?
So there's two websites people can take a look at. So for the book will be available on Amazon on October 1st, and also take a look at flatfluidfast.com. We also have a hashtag flatfluidfast. For my congressional campaign, the website is brynforcongress, BRYNNEFORcongress.com.
Perfect. And we will put all of that in the show notes, and good luck when running.
I appreciate that.
Sure. So everyone who's listening to the podcast, thank you so much for taking your time and energy to listen to the podcast. And I hope you learned a lot from Bryn, because I know I did. Also, if this is your first time listening to the podcast and you came along because you're already a mega fan of Bryn, or you really like the title of the podcast, and now you're looking and you're searching and super hungry for more amazing HR related content, then please subscribe and download to the Employee Cycle Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever you're using to listen to podcasts. Also, if you really love this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating, because that shows us that you care and you're really enjoying the content. But last but not least, and if you've heard this before, you know what I'm about to say, HR and people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.
This episode of the Employee Cycle Podcast was edited and produced by Lux Podcast Production. Lux is a creative audio suite that helps clients create, market, and measure their show. Visit luxpodcasts.com to learn how a podcast can benefit your organization. That's LUXE podcasts.com.